Welcome to the Tea Grannies. I'm Elise.
And I'm Mariah. Today we're here to chat about where writers go wrong with self-publishing. So pour yourself a cup of tea and let's get started.
Oh, I'm going into my history lesson now. Okay.
Yes, your history lesson. Yes. Okay.
In season four, listeners may have picked up on a theme that we've started riffing on called Where Writers Go Wrong from our Equestrian edition and last month's social media episode. So how does that apply to self-publishing and indie authors? Well, so many ways. Oh my goodness. This is going to be so much fun. So last season, listeners maybe remember we did two episodes about self-publishing already. Back to back, episode 8 of season 3 was a deep dive into self-publishing, which was basically like a landslide of information. It was just, you know, things to budget for, things to consider. Here's things you need, whether you think you do or not. So if you haven't listened to that and you are interested in that information, go back and listen to it. It's good. If I do say so myself. And then episode 9 of season 3 was Surviving Self-Publishing, featuring author Kate McWilliams. It was a lovely interview with her about her experience with self-publishing as a romance author, and especially talking about the marketing side of things. So this season, we're going to come at this self-publishing thing from the angle of critique. I think we get excited about these because it kind of feels like we're talking shit about people.
So it's so like we mostly talk shit about ourselves.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? A little bit.
It applies to other people. So it feels like, you know, we're spilling the tea. We're like, juicy gossip. Here's all the shit. But no, it's like this is what we do wrong and we're going to learn from it. So we're coming at it from a critique angle, and there will be some crossover with those previous episode topics. As always, like these things come up because like, we learn from our mistakes. We're talking about these things all the time. There will be some repeat topics. But yeah, we're gonna learn from, well, like specifically my mistakes as a self-published author, but then also the endless supply of mistakes that other indie authors out in the world have and continue to make. Thank you for providing us with so much material. So as a brief introduction, since starting out as a freelance editor in 2019, I have worked with more than 30 authors on their manuscripts, and many of those clients were aiming for self-publishing. That number 30 does not count repeat clients, like it's any individual I have worked with, 30 to 40 different people. And yeah, most of them were aiming for self-publishing, whether they did or not. And everyone does things a little bit differently, so that experience has given me way more opportunity than I imagined I would have to see what works and what doesn't. So I'm really excited to talk about this and introduce that experience into this episode.
Mm-hmm. And for me, I read a lot, obviously, if you follow me on Bookstagram, you know that. And I like to read a lot of self-pub books, and I've chat with a lot of indie writers. And I have also swapped pages quite a few times with people on social media that I have never met before, and I've never seen their writing. Mm-hmm. So I've seen some like pretty like, this is what they're working with. And I've gotten pages from people who are already querying, and they have something completely missing in the first chapter.
Oh, no.
And you can just tell that like they needed to do some more work on it. So these are a lot of the issues I see that crop up, like whether it's a rough draft, an advanced reader copy, a published version. Mm-hmm. And this kind of stuff happens with trad published authors too. Like we're not saying it's just right. Like indie or self-pub.
Right.
Mistakes will happen. And I've seen a lot of published books where I'm like, how did you get past the editor and then get printed and put
it
on the bookshelf?
It hurts.
But here we are. And that is it's kind of the way it goes.
And speaking of learning from mistakes, it's time for our first page critique. And that sounds mean. So to be fair, we also learn in this segment from what people do well. And that's one of my favorite things about doing mm-hmm. first page critiques. So thank you so much to everyone who continues to send in their pages for us to analyze and pull apart. We appreciate your writing. You guys are all amazing. We appreciate you all so much. So let's have a look at the submission received for this month's episode. Chapter 1. The Fancy Pants espresso machine is screaming at me. Shit. 8 months, 3 days, 9 hours and 22 minutes. That's how long until I leave this hellhole behind and get on with the rest of my life. My mantra, typically soothing, is doing little to calm the growing anxiety in my chest. The prolonged screaming isn't helping. Aspen, it's going to explode! Margie isn't helping either. My foster sister looks up at me through wide blue eyes. Judy is going to kill us. Just the mention of our foster mother's name makes me curse. I glance at the wall clock. 3:39. Judy will be back in 6 minutes, and her beloved espresso machine is about to combust. I run my hands through my messy brown hair and twist my scrunchie a notch tighter. If only the ear-piercing banshee shriek wasn't such a sensory overload, I might be able to think straight. The rest of the coffee shop, the Grove Espresso, yes, Judy thinks puns are cute, is quiet for the last Thursday before school starts up. Only the town oddball sits by the window, cursing the cars as they pass. All my friends, who usually hang out in the booth by the door, are at Tommy's pool party. That's where I'm headed the moment I clock out at 5. But if Judy shows up with the espresso machine on the fritz, I won't be going anywhere for the weekend. I don't want to go to Tommy's pool party. I need to go. As his girlfriend and future valedictorian, it's important to put FaceTime in with people in town who matter. And I need to go tonight, because I have a shift at Luna's Pub tomorrow and babysitting Sunday. My jobs that actually pay and will actually get me far away from Cathedral Grove. This espresso machine is both an unplanned distraction from my SAT prep work and a possibly detrimental wedge in my plan. 8 months, 3 days, 9 hours, and 20 minutes.
So overall, I quite enjoyed this submission. I've had the honor of reading this writer's work a few times, so I might be a little biased because I like her writing as a whole. But one of the things that really stood out to me was like the job thing. Like I definitely had that job where I would count the minutes until I left and how many days I had left to suffer because I was working retail, saving up for a backpacking trip. And I had a literal countdown every day. I knew how much longer I would be there until I could go on my trip. So I definitely can relate to that. Even though that's a pretty privileged take, I just want to point that out. Anyways, it was still retail, okay? Anyway, Aspen's an interesting character. Also really like the name choice. Mm-hmm. Had to point that out. Strikes me as the high-achieving type, as my therapist would say. She puts a lot of pressure on herself and her plans for the future. So I would keep reading to find out if she gets to the pool party and why she doesn't get paid for this job. Like, that's bullshit. Like, mm-hmm. I work for family and I get paid. And mm-hmm. I tell you what, I would not be showing up if that man did not pay me. Be like, you can be my dad all day long, but I expect a salary of with some danger pay because we are running the risk of killing each other. I'm off on a lot of tangents today. But yeah, I think this is a good example of the first page being valuable real estate. There's a few sentences I think could be cut and some information that could wait till a bit later in the chapter.
Yeah.
The section about studying for her SATs, like important and relative to the story of the character, but it could totally wait. If this writer wants to make a few cuts for space, I wouldn't mind seeing a little more setting on the first page. Like, I know it's a coffee shop and we know her foster mom's own it. Her foster mom owns it. So what I'm thinking is like, is it a dumpy kind of place? And that's why they don't pay her because it's like not doing well. Is it like sleek and popular? So it's like just super unfair that she doesn't get paid. I think that tells us more about the situation. And I think it would be a little more helpful than giving us the shop name and the bit about her foster mom loving the puns. Also something we can learn later in the chapter. But I kind of love that tidbit as well, like, because I love puns. And then I did have a note. The section where she says she has to socialize at the pool party. Where is that sentence?
It's made me laugh. Paragraph.
Is it last paragraph?
As his girlfriend and future valedictorian, it's important to put FaceTime in with the people in the town who matter.
Yes. Okay. That was so snobby and hilarious. So it made me think, what is her goal? Like, so she wants to get out of this town, but why? So why does she have to do that? Is it something like for her future career or like college applications? Like, there's got to be something more to that. But when I first read it, I was like, oh, that's so like snobby and like
it
so
is.
Like,
I love it.
Such a young take, you know what I mean? Like 34 year old me is like, why? Whereas like 18-year-old me would be like, yeah, like that totally matters right now in this moment. So I do get the feeling like this is young adult, right?
Yeah.
And I think that that totally works because that was the line that really sold it to me.
Oh my
that
God. This was nailed, not like, nailed an adult the voice.
Movie. Yeah. Yeah. Nailed the voice. Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
And not all that made it into my notes. I'm sorry. Again, off on a tangent today. You guys got extra feedback once I started talking.
It's just more of Maria, and no one's going to complain about that, so don't worry about it.
We're not going to complain to my face.
If they complain to anyone's face, that face can punch them. So when I started reading this piece, I recognized it immediately, and I was like, kind of like, I've read this before. Where have I read? We have 100% read this on the show before. I know we have. So I poked around in my files. I was like, no, no, we have not. This author sent me the first chapter of this piece a while back, and I critiqued the whole first chapter, and they have since made revisions. So of course I went back to compare, and I think the revisions that they've made have done wonders. This is excellent. I'm really proud of the work that they've done, so I hope that that comes through in my feedback. I'm going to be contrarian a little bit, and maybe that's just my mood today. Maybe that's just, you know, whatever. Maybe that's just my personality. It is my personality. But I want to say that I really liked the SAT detail and the lines about Judy, the foster mom, in this piece, because of how much that gives us, how much information we get about the characters and their relationships in such a short amount of space. We have a really clear idea of the main character's priorities with this first page, and that she wants to get out of this place once and for all eventually. And I'm guessing that the foster mom has a lot to do with those feelings. So the little tidbits that I got about her read kind of like foreshadowing to me of like, these are her quirks, and this character knows that so well because there's issues in this relationship. And because it's a small town coffee shop, seems not very busy, everyone is doing other things. I felt like I had a decent handle on the setting, but after hearing Maria's comments, I do think some like, it would be like a few words added into a couple key sentences to give the vibe of the shop a bit more, to add some like brief description. I think that's all you'd really need to establish whether it's like dumpy or sleek or like popular or whatever. Mm-hmm. The fact that it's dead in there, I mean, every coffee shop, whether it's popular or not, has dead moments and lulls and stuff. So if you could add, I don't know, I don't think I'll be able to pick out a specific example, but when you're talking about the coffee shop, look for a line or two, maybe even enunciate like, how expensive is this espresso machine? Like, is it a really good one and it's weird that it's like dying, or has this happened before? Is this an old machine that has been around for a long time and needs routine maintenance all the time, and this is not the first time it's kind of gone crazy? That would give us an idea too of the financial state of this establishment. So it doesn't need to be much, but you just add that little bit of flavor. I think that would give what's missing on the setting side, because it's a modern day coffee shop. Like, there's only so much you can do.
Yeah, there's only so much setting, right? You can do without it being boring.
Right?
But the modern, it's definitely, world. Like, for me in this, the setting would just sort of clue us into the family situation.
Okay, more that than would anything add more. Else. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's what it is. I was like, oh, you know, like, is it nice and, like, mm-hmm. it's weird that she doesn't get paid? Or is it crappy and she doesn't get paid because they're struggling? Mm-hmm. Like, those are things that kind of matter, and also play into why she wants to get out of town mm-hmm. so bad, because she does say that she wants to get out of town.
Yeah.
So does she, you know, obviously she doesn't want to stay with her foster family, and there's family dynamics there, but they also note in here that her sister is there. I don't know if it's foster sister or if it was
foster sister.
Sister. So I'm curious to, will she feel guilty when she does leave town mm-hmm. and leaving her foster siblings to like pick up the slack? So I think that has laid the foreshadowing of that being like potentially a really interesting thread in this. I didn't mean to hijack your review.
That's totally fine.
Shouldn't have had so much caffeine today.
This is a conversation. It's good. I was going to add on to that. What was I going to say? If I can remember.
So you need more caffeine and I need less.
Apparently, I've only had one cup of tea today.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's just gone, and that's fine. I'm going to move into the rest of my notes. I had it. I was thinking about it as you were talking. I was like, I'm going to say this. I'm going to say it. It's gone. So moving on. I think that the character voice and motivations are set up so distinctly and powerfully on this page. And kudos to the author for that, like for bringing that home so clearly. The most feedback I really had were some wording and phrasing suggestions, like removing the word shit from the opening line. I think you don't need it. The tone there is already established, and it kind of detracts from the intrigue and interesting nature of that opening setting. And then moving one of the lines from the end up a couple of paragraphs to establish stakes and transition better into what this character is worried about. Other than that, this piece feels really solid to me, and I just remembered what I was going to talk about earlier. The thing about her not getting paid. That's what it was. So I think that was my other piece of feedback, was Maria took that line to mean she's not getting paid for this job. And I actually understood that differently, so some clarification may be required in the manuscript eventually. Doesn't necessarily need to come now, but the way I read that was that this job pays like shit and her other jobs actually pay her like a decent wage. But it might be that she actually doesn't get paid, so
yeah, that's what I was kind of thinking.
We don't need to know that right now, but I think later on clarifying that, like, no, wait, she actually doesn't get any money for this even though she is literally working a job would be important, or vice versa, that like the pay is shit. Like, that would just be a smaller clarification that comes in through dialogue or something eventually. So that's it. I love this. Well done. Kudos to you. So that little bit of workshopping leads us into issue number one that we wanted to talk about for Where Writers Go Wrong, self-publishing edition. Can you guess? Drum roll, please. Lack of workshopping. Wow. What a concept. The thing that we just did and do every single episode may be one of the most important things. I think by far the most common thing I see in negative reviews on any books, whether it's indie or traditionally published, is the level of polish. Like, it comes down to, oh, this wasn't edited or whatever. And what those comments and reviews don't really distinguish between, because there's no way to tell, is whether the book wasn't edited by like an editor, or whether the book didn't go through any workshopping, like with a writing group or a couple of writer friends, to really work out the story beats until the story structure and flow actually like makes sense at a basic level. Because, oh, I kid you not, but like, the things that we miss in our own work before anyone else points them out to us can be absolutely incredible. Like, the story just does not make sense until other people point out why. And then you're like, oh, that's the most massive plot hole I've ever seen. How the heck did I miss that? It happens to us all.
I think it happens to a lot of us when we're writing too, because we're jumping ahead to the next scene or the next thing. And then sometimes we forget those, like, to connect the dots. Oh. And that's something that workshopping really catches. Yeah. They're like,
and I saw a post from A to B. I think it was on Threads yesterday or the day before, so this is very timely. Someone just saying that, like, people who say that a first draft is trash, like, that doesn't apply to me. I think that's so stupid because I edit as I go. Like, I edit my, like, when I write a new scene, I go back and I edit the lines that I wrote last time, and then I keep going. And that's why my draft, when it's done, it's actually like pretty polished and doesn't need as much editing as other people. No. Nice try. That's not what we're talking about. Nice try.
I admire the confidence and the delusion, but that's not really how it works. So perhaps that's your sentences are good.
Exactly.
But there's so much more to writing a book than getting your sentences.
What I want to, like, if I'm being at my most harshest to someone who thinks that way, what I want to say is, like, congratulations, you have just wasted half of your time. Because you've copy edited to death sentences that you will end up cutting entirely from the story because the structure of the story has not been workshopped and thoroughly edited until it makes sense. You have wasted so much of your time.
So much time.
I am so sorry.
that's why we say first drafts are garbage. That and is why right we to the end it. Of the first draft.
Not because your copy editing is bad. No.
Yes.
Lots of people.
You have to fix the other
exactly.
shit first.
Oh my goodness. I'm not to sound like braggy at all. When I send my pages to any writing group, I always get comments about how polished it is and how professional it is and how, like, there's hardly any typos. Like, that's just how I write. I am good at spelling. It just comes naturally to me. My story is still shit. Like, I will be the first to tell you that. It is still
this is what happens to
awful.
Me, too. Our group's like, oh, your stuff's so polished. I'm like, if you read it
just keep reading.
Entirety,
just keep reading.
You would disagree. You'll see. Because, yeah, getting it a chapter at a time, I bet it looks polished.
Yeah.
But it ain't.
Yeah. So that's like a long-winded way to get into how important workshopping and editing, but we're focusing on workshopping right now. And I think workshopping is different from editing. I don't have data to back up this opinion. This is my opinion as a freelance editor who's worked with over 30 authors in the last few years, and as someone who has been in a writing group for longer than that. And it's consistent. We meet almost every month. We're exchanging pages every month, almost whether we meet or not. We'll take a break for Christmas or whatever. So I'm comparing these two experiences. And I think workshopping gives you something fundamentally different than an editor ever will. So when I self-published the Nymph Keepers trilogy, I definitely workshopped the trilogy. I sent chapters of, I think the entire first book to my writing group over months and months. Like, they read basically the whole thing before doing major revisions, major edits over and over, and then sending the newer versions to beta readers so that I could fix more things, because they kept coming up, because I kept changing things and introducing new things, and the process never ends. But because of the experimental nature of the project and what I was doing with the self-publishing thing, I chose not to get the books edited. Like, this is a choice I made. I didn't want to pay for it. I was literally teaching myself how to, like, put a self-published book together. And I didn't have the budget for that, so I just kind of skipped it. If you want to make money on your books, don't do that, basically. I'm sure you can tell when you read them. Like, I haven't been shy about this. As a result, I'd say the plot lines in my book are pretty solid. And that's the feedback I've gotten with reviews. Like, people don't come in saying this didn't make sense. Like, this was fundamentally flawed. There was this massive plot hole that removed me from the story, and I couldn't follow it because it just, like, fundamentally just didn't work. I don't get that feedback. If anything, I get feedback about, like, how many freaking typos are in book two and book three. No. I mean, like, I don't get a lot of it because, like, not a lot of people read these. It's fine. But I guarantee you, if you go back and read book two and three more carefully, my work is riddled with phrasing issues and typos and things that I could have tightened up and done better because I didn't go to an editor. But those, like, the overall story, it works for the most part. There's, like, a few threads I could have tied off better because my husband has told me and I know that they're there. Thank you very much. Post-publishing. get to live with that. But workshopping is, like, it's just such a much more informal process. It requires... Similar to if you send out a survey, if you're surveying a batch of the population, you're going out, ideally you need opinions from more than one or two people, otherwise the survey doesn't matter. It doesn't work. You're not collecting a big enough sample size to actually know what people's opinions are, because every single person has a different take on things. So if you just pick one or two people, that's not a clear enough picture of what the overall view of this thing is going to be. And I find workshopping does that in a way that editing never will, because your editor is a singular person. So you need a big enough sample size that you can get an idea of how different people with different biases and different preferences are going to react to your work as a whole. And editing as a rule is much more technical. Like, developmental editing is maybe the closest thing to workshopping, because you're looking at that character arcs and overall theme and narrative structure, but the editing side of it is so much more technical, and you're not getting that breadth of experiences and knowledge from different people and, like, contradictory opinions. You having to deal with that as a writer and decide which way to go, I think, is crucial to your journey as an author. So yeah, workshopping, I find, in my experience with writing groups and with the classes I'm in right now, actually, is much more of a go with the flow organic process, because each individual person pays attention to something different. It's not linear in the way that editing can be. And it allows for way more, like, brainstorming opportunities, which are really fun and exciting. And people will talk about ways to bend or break rules or expectations and tropes and things in ways that will excite the other writers. And people just kind of build off of that energy. And it's such a beautiful thing. So yeah, for the last two semesters, I've been in workshopping classes at a university. And each week we sit down together and we talk about each other's pages. And sometimes one person will bump on something that the other two in my group of four, they absolutely loved. Or two people will bump on something and the third person will say, like, they didn't really notice before, but now that people mentioned it, they do think it's an issue. Look into it. Yeah, it's just, like, yeah, it's so much more organic, right? Like, you've talked about this too in our experience as a writing group.
We for sure. And this makes me think, I've probably talked about this incident on the show before, because it was one of those things that, like, just really sticks out at me. And it definitely went into my man-hating reputation and nickname. So in our writing group, I had written a story that was set in ancient Greece, and I had a scene where like the women were being treated quite badly. And it was historically accurate to the time. Like, I've read a lot of books set in ancient Greece. I did a goodly amount of research for this book too, because I wanted it to be pretty accurate, even though it was a fantasy. And you know, I mean, have you seen the movie Troy? Have you ever watched a war movie? You know what happens when the, you know, conquering force like pillages a city. Like there's a lot of bad shit that happens, particularly to women, and what happens to them after if they don't die. So one person in our writing group had a real issue with this particular scene. And I kind of was like, okay, like, you know, I'm not going to change it. Like the other people in my group, mostly women and one other man, were like, nope, it's great. And then I received a very lengthy email from this person on why I needed to make sure that there should be a sympathetic male character, because, you know, not all men literally said that in the email. And I refused to change it because no one else had a problem with it. I knew it was historically accurate, so I didn't have a problem with it. And so I refused to change it, and they doubled down again, and I got another lengthy email. Oh, and when we later did an anonymous survey in the group, but I knew who it was, they said that they didn't like it when their opinions were so discounted by members of the group.
Oh, boy.
And I was a bit like, listen, sometimes your opinion doesn't matter. And sometimes when it's a scene like that, and I can tell it's just one of those like not all men people, I'm not going to take their opinion into account. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's one of the things about workshopping too, is you are going to run into that kind of stuff where people like really genuinely disagree and think you should change something.
Yeah.
And like, unless multiple people feel this way, if only one person does, I would honestly say don't worry about it, unless you think that it could be an issue. If it's something you're on the fence about and one person doesn't like it, maybe go with your gut, but that is something that you have to think about. And the thing is, and the other thing is, when you're in a workshopping group or writing group, is you have no idea how things are going to land with some people.
Absolutely.
Right? Just like you do when you write your book and you release it out into the world, like, people are not going to like it. They're going to disagree with it. And it's better to get used to that earlier on.
Yeah. No, we're going to talk about this more later on in the episode about kind of the value of that experience. But I remember you telling me about this. And the thing that gets me, like, obviously the not all men perspective is just, you know, I'm twitching. You can see it in the in the video call. But the thing that gets me about that is not so much that, like, this person decided to come in and have that opinion. Like, people have that opinion. That's just the way it is. That's why it's so prevalent. That's why it's a topic of conversation. The issue that I have is the doubling down and being like, well, my opinion got discounted and I don't like that. It's like, no one has to take your opinion. That is not what writing group is for.
It's an opinion, not a fact.
You are not here to rewrite the story for me. I am here to take your opinions and say, weigh them. That's my job. It's my book. So I'm going to take your opinion, and maybe I'll use it and maybe I won't. And if you're going to get, you know, butthurt that I'm not using your opinion, that's your problem. That is not my problem at all. And it should not be a complaint that you then bring to the rest of the group. If you cannot handle people not taking your opinion on their story, you need to work on that before you're ready to be in that space, because that is like a fundamental, that is a fundamental rule of writing group is your opinions can be discarded at any time by the author of the work.
Yes, they have the final say.
Regardless of whether you're right or not, I don't care how much knowledge you have. You may be a biology expert, and I may be introducing something fundamentally impossible into my book based on your knowledge of biology or physics or whatever. If I don't care, I'm just going to do it anyway, and you have to be okay with it. That is my rant. That was not in my notes.
I love that rant. You know. I love it when you rant. I feel like I'm the ranty one, so when you like take it away, I'm like, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that. I got a little bit fired up there, but all that to say, I think we agree. I'm a firm believer in workshopping your book with other people before even thinking of hiring an editor. And I say this as an editor, like, if you haven't had other people give opinions on your book yet, you're not ready to ask me to edit your book. And it's just like, it's a common sense thing at the end of the day. Get an idea of what's working and what's not before you pay someone to tell you what's working and what's not, because at the end of the day, you're just wasting your money. You'll be paying me to tell you things that you could have fixed yourself without me. And then you fix those things, and then there's those other things that I could have talked about, that I could have gotten into, but there was just so much surface stuff that hadn't been addressed yet that we never even got to that deeper level. So when you're getting ready to hire an editor, you want to make sure that you're paying that person for the deepest reaches of their experience and knowledge, not the surface level plot holes, the things you were too tired to fix yourself. Yes, you're going to an editor to help you polish this thing and to make it better, but there are things that you can do yourself to make sure that you're getting your money's worth. And I really want to make sure that anyone paying for an editor, even coming to me and paying me, you're getting your money's worth for that. Like, do yourself a favor.
I've seen this, and yeah, make your story as good as you can on your own before you pay someone to go through it. Mm-hmm. Like, why pay an editor for easy fixes that like your workshopping buddies will find for you and help you brainstorm a fix for, and then boom, it's fixed. And you know, mm-hmm. now the editor can focus on things that are more important. And save the hard fixes and the tough conversations for your editor. You're just wasting money and time.
Yep.
Yeah. Time is more precious mm-hmm. than a lot of, like, especially with writing. Absolutely. It's very time consuming to do these things. And I see a lot of writers are like, oh, I'll just let the editor take care of it. Unless you got money to burn.
That makes me so sad.
Plus, like, you're still gonna have to do it yourself when you go through and do the edits. It's like they yeah. fix it for
yeah.
you.
We'll get into that later too.
But anyway, I can tell if a book hasn't been workshopped in the first few chapters because it's just something about the flow and the quality of the sentences and the character that can be very, very obvious. And the thing about writing is, like, contrary to popular belief, it is not a solo mission.
Right.
Hence this show that we're doing together. Right? It's not a solo mission. And once I learned that, my life got a lot better. Mm-hmm. But you need feedback, but you also need to learn to give feedback as well. Mm. This will improve your writing in a way like no class or no editor could ever do. Mm. So once you see the mistake, your mistakes in other people's work, you're going to be like, oh,
That's why
it's a problem. That's why it's so obvious. And it helps you to puzzle out how to fix it. Like, what advice are you going to give for them to fix it? Now mm-hmm. you know how to fix it in your own work. You know, and it will be a little, like, those mistakes will be a lot more obvious when you're going through your own work. You're going to be like, oop, there it is. You're going to start mm-hmm. workshopping your own work when you're editing, and you're going to, you're teaching yourself how to edit your mm-hmm. shit.
You're gonna get more efficient as a writer because you're gonna, like, yes. teach yourself how to not do that next time. It's quite fun.
Exactly. And you're gonna save yourself, like, a bunch of headaches. Like, mm-hmm. this is why there's different, like, levels. Like, it's so hard for writers when they first start. They're like, oh, I'm so crappy compared to this published book on the shelf. Like, first of all, that's not their first, very rarely their first book. Right. It might be the first book that ever got published.
Yeah. Very
but there's a whole lot of drafts in the graveyard mm-hmm. that sucked before that book came into being. And the other thing I notice, a lot of people don't know where to start with getting someone to be in a writing group with a workshop.
Yeah.
So hit up social media, right? There's also the Creative Academy, which we've blurbed a few times on here, which is like an online writing community. And you can find a workshopping buddy there mm-hmm. Or a writing group. And, you know, just remember, not all writing buddies are created equal. Not everyone's going to get the synergy that Elise and I have right off the bat. This was like some kind of, like, fate thing for us.
Magic.
So hopefully you find your writing soulmate too.
It's magic is what that is.
Yeah. What you're looking for is people who want feedback on their work mm-hmm. and who will give you feedback on your work. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I think people run into is, like, they give really good feedback, and then the people that are supposed to be giving them feedback kind of half-ass it, so they mm-hmm. don't get enough out of it. They're giving more than they're getting, and then it happens the other way around too. You know, and you're gonna have people who ask, like, dumb questions. Like, there's a dragon in chapter one, and they're gonna ask, is this a fantasy? Like, no, I think dragons exist in real life. Like, the world would be a cooler, more dangerous place. But so you do have to do your homework. You kind of got to vet people. And I do recommend doing, like, writing samples with people and, like, sample workshopping when you find a group and seeing if you guys even mesh. Like, the way that they approach your workshopping, it might be too harsh for you. It might not be enough mm-hmm. comments. It might not be helpful. Yep. So, you know, you got to find something that works.
Yeah.
But yeah, finding people who can help you fix your basic continuity issues or mm-hmm. your weak habits, like that's priceless. Mm-hmm.
And I would say one other place to find it is like just take a creative writing class. I've been two in the one each semester for the last two semesters, and each mm-hmm. one, like everyone in that class wants to be there. They all want the same thing out of that class. Yeah. Like you still get people that like, no, I don't want them in my group because I don't like how they do feedback. Like that's going to happen. But mm-hmm. I find like if you have the money to spend on a creative writing class, like do it to meet those people and then make a group out of it. Like I've had a number of people already in my class this semester and it's only just started say like, hey, can we keep sending pages to each other like after mm-hmm. class is over, after the semester is over, because mm-hmm. otherwise I don't know if I'm going to write anything. And I get that. Like I absolutely get that. So it's a really good place to meet people who are in a similar space and want that feedback. Like they are there to grow and that's what you want. Mm-hmm. And like I was going to say earlier when you're saying like you might get people who you give like really thorough feedback on theirs and they do not deliver in the other direction. And like there's definitely people who will like they'll just continue taking more than they give and that is really frustrating. There's also people who start that way and then they grow into it because they're learning mm-hmm. too. Like we're all learning how to do this. Mm-hmm. And I'd say just like give people the benefit of the doubt for as long as you can to like let them mm-hmm. learn, because it might take like a while for them something to click for them and them be like, oh, okay. Or like their schedule can be hectic. Like that happens. We all have lives. But yeah, if it becomes like a consistent pattern and an issue, there's ways that you can deal with that. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
fine. And if you're thinking like, oh, do I really need to workshop? Just so you know, we even workshopped our first couple demo episodes a variety of different people before actually recorded our
episode. We workshopped our podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we were like, we can't just put out the first thing we
record.
Are you
insane?
Yeah, and it wasn't that bad, but like we had to check like sound and mm-hmm. transitions mm-hmm. and then like, you know, all this stuff. And like, is the subject good? Like, were we too silly?
Did we go off on too many tangents that people don't care
I mean, we do
about.
That now, but
like, people like it.
It's different. Yeah. So, but yeah, that's something to consider too. And it's mm-hmm. a little bit like if you play a sport or something, or you have a coach or whatever, you know that you're always working towards improvement.
Oh, yes.
And or you like go an through instrument. Phases where some things are harder than others. And then you master that thing and then there's probably another new hard thing. And that's, it's like writing too. Like people, mm-hmm. a lot of people think like, well, I can just write and I just, and then I'm good to go. Mm-hmm. Good to go. Like nobody is good to go for stuff like that.
With writing, you've never made it. It's like, I played piano mm-hmm. for many years growing up and like, you're never done. There's always a piece that's harder than the last one that you will struggle mm-hmm. with and have to drill sections until you get it. Like any kind of discipline like this or craft mm-hmm. or art is the same. Like there's always ways you can do things differently and learn and improve. Yeah. So as long mm-hmm. as you're willing to do that work and like you're there, you're showing up, you want to grow, you will basically.
Yeah.
You just have to show up and do it. You learn by doing. And that's one of the wonderful things about it. Mm-hmm. Wow, I feel that felt so wholesome. I feel like this is like so undervalued by so many people and so important. Finding people who can identify those issues that you're struggling with is absolutely priceless. Like there are a number of people in a writing group who are just like, they're on pedestals for me. Like I worship the ground they walk on because like, oh my goodness, they understand the story better than I do half the time. It's ridiculous. And I think the biggest thing that we get out of that group is people who will give us honesty instead of mm-hmm. telling us what they think we want to hear. Mm-hmm. And like we've been in the same writing group for over 5 years and with the same people, basically, with one or two additions. And several of them have become close friends of ours. And so I always, I don't know if you do this, you probably do, but I always worry a little bit like, do they really mean that or are they just saying it because they like me? So those 100%. Fears, those fears are plentiful. Mm-hmm. They never go away. I even have those feelings when I'm in class with these strangers who are workshopping mm-hmm. my stuff. Like it's just always there for me. But the way that I can like deal with that process and move past it, I think is because I've known our writing group for as many years as I have. I have heard them give me glowing praise. I've experienced mm-hmm. that. I know what that sounds like. And I have also heard them say, Elise, this makes absolutely no sense and you lost me. And they say that. Yeah. When it's true, they say it. Or even, Elise, I've seen you do better than this. You need to work on this section. And they say that to me. And it's like, okay, that coming from a stranger would be crushing. I don't know if I would write again. I would, like, if that came from a prof that I just started working with, or like happened to be in elementary school, that like, this doesn't make any sense. What are you even doing? Like, no, I can you imagine little writer me? Just sob.
Oh my gosh. Well, okay, like slightly off topic, but I had a coach like this month for riding, and she would just be like, what are you doing? What are you even doing? And it just totally destroyed my confidence.
Oh my God.
And like, it took me a long time to get it back.
Yeah.
And like, you know, my coach now every once in a while would be like, I was wondering what you were doing, but
that's so much gentler.
It's so much more gentle. And like, she's still like, what were you thinking?
Yeah.
But like in a way that I can take it.
Yeah. No, so that you can receive it and learn from it instead of feeling crushed by it. And I think, like you were saying, that's why it's so important to learn to give good feedback. Because you're going to give, you're gonna get what you give. And if you are crushing people along the way, they're not going to want to work with you anymore. So,
or they're going to crush you back.
Or they're going to crush you back.
Karma's a bitch.
Ouch. But yeah, this is why I think workshopping in a group is always, I don't like using like always and never statements, but I think group workshop is always going to get you more than one-on-one ever can. And I mean, if you are in a really tender spot where like doing this in a group is just too daunting, like I'm not speaking to those people at all. Starting with one-on-one is wonderful. Like, start somewhere, do that for as long as you need to, but eventually, like, if you can get into a group setting where you're getting more opinions and you're back to that like survey taking analogy from before, I want to get the widest possible idea of how my work is coming across to other people before I decide it's ready for the entire world. I don't want to base that decision on just one person's opinion. So when you're in a group of workshopping, you're absolutely going to hear differing opinions on your story. Like I said before, in my experience with class, one person might be indifferent, one person might really like it, one person might not like it at all, and that's not a reflection on you, that's not a reflection on your work, that is absolutely a reflection on humanity and how we work, and it's such a rich learning opportunity to for, like, every writer has to eventually accept that, one, not everyone will like your work, you will never please them all, and two, and more importantly, it is so okay that not everyone will like your work. Like, that does not make you a bad writer, that does not make you, like, not enough, not good enough, any of those things. Mm-hmm. It's just like, your writing is not for everyone, and it shouldn't be, because then we would be
it would be boring,
we would be a monolith, and that's, you know, just like, not what we are.
I see people give feedback or like bad reviews to writers who I think like are the best thing ever.
Absolutely.
I'm like, how can they think that?
Yeah,
but that's because everyone's opinions are different. The world you grew up in is different. What you enjoy is different, and that's okay. Like, you're more likely to enjoy a book that has a bunch of different reviews online than a book that has only five
only
stars.
Only five star, because then they've probably all been paid to say the same thing. So, you know, love that.
Yeah, there's that.
But even like, even to your story about the guy coming in and having this like opinion that you absolutely do not agree with. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, once you start seeing those vastly differing opinions come up in your group, that's when you have a good writing group. That's when you know you have a good blend. And I'm not talking about people that are like abusive or insulting or cruel. Mm-hmm. That is a different thing entirely. That is a problem that needs to be dealt with. Those people have no place in a group setting, because that is not healthy. But if it's just like, it's an opinion, they are sharing it, they're not harming anyone by sharing it. Even if you disagree with someone's opinion, with a specific person's opinion every single week, and without fail, you never take their feedback, you always defer to other people, I don't think it's a bad thing to have that person in the group, just as an experience of being like, this person doesn't like it.
Yeah.
And that is okay. And I'm not going to, I'm choosing.
You should do it early.
Absolutely.
It's going to happen way more once your book is out.
Well, and I feel like it's weirdly empowering in a way as you get used to it, of like, this is my book and I can choose to not listen to that person. Yeah. I don't like
and
it. I'm not going to include
it. Triggering a strong emotional response, even if it's not positive, means that your writing is doing something.
Oh, true. True. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but again, like, just because someone doesn't agree with the rest of the group doesn't mean that they're a bad person. Like, they're just a person, and they have different preferences than you or I. And I think that's like a really healthy and really important thing. The most important thing for us as the writers is to identify whether that dissenting voice is someone you are writing for in the first place. Because if they're not, then you're not going to take their feedback. Like, they are not your audience. It doesn't matter. And if they are, then you want to like, absolutely give that some weight and like evaluate whether it makes sense or not. You don't have to take it, but the option is there, and you are in control of the story, and I think that's a beautiful thing.
Exactly. And where this comes into like getting, making sure that you get honest opinions is like, I've definitely read a few books and like, or more often samples, because I don't usually continue reading, of books that make me think that like the author only had like their best friend or like their spouse or something read it before they publish. Like, you can do that, especially if you're nervous, to get feedback. Like, start with someone that you love and trust, you know, they're going to be gentle with you for sure. But you need feedback from people who are honest and who are not afraid to like hurt your feelings. And I don't mean actually like hurt you purposely, but I mean like hurt our ego, and that our writing wasn't as good as we thought. And we all hate this part. And sharing your writing is an emotionally vulnerable thing to do. It's kind of like letting everybody read your diary. So uncomfortable. But if you want to publish, there's going to be a lot more people reading your work, and you have to get over that icky feeling of getting honest feedback. And it's way easier to do by workshopping in a group or a small group or individually, whatever works for you. It's much easier to deal with it then and deal with those feelings when they're small, rather than waiting until you're published.
So
friends that can give you honest feedback are hoarded like treasure. Yes, I'm talking about Elise. And you do need them because they're also going to build you up at the same time. And don't listen to that little voice in your head that tells you it's easier to wait till your reviewers can just write it on the internet. You don't have to look at it, you know, and they won't tell you directly what obvious thing you missed. But do you want to be that writer who like people do not recommend because they're like, she couldn't even get like X, Y, and Z fixed in chapter one. Like, you don't want to be that person. For that writer. And the other thing I've noticed is a lot of successful bookstagrammers go forth to write and self-publish. And I love that because they already have a platform. We get to see their journey.
It's literally perfect.
It's great. And I do think if you want to have an author social media, you should start with a bookstagram. It's a good way to figure out the community and everything like that, which we talked about last episode. So I'll stop now. And it is, it does make it very easy to find people to read your advanced copies or beta read or whatever. But there's a social element there of they may not want to alienate you or hurt your feelings or whatever it is. There's some people with big accounts who can really, or who are not nice when people don't fall into line with what they like. And they'll call you out on their page, and that's not nice, but you don't know that that could happen to you until it happens. So you will not get perfectly honest opinion from these people. But you just won't. They're great for like advanced reader copies. You want to make sure you get some good like 3, 4, 5-star reviews out there. And yeah, it's great. Like, especially if they read that genre, you know, that's great. Maybe they do genuinely love it. Maybe they're genuinely going to be honest with you. But I would say there is definitely a bit of a social contract on Bookstagram. Where if you read a book from another Bookstagrammer or even a very like popular self-pub author, that you cannot tear it to shreds. Or give a real honest review. So you need to keep that in mind. Even like if you're very legitimately friends with them, like I've made real friends on Bookstagram, which I love. That's great. But I still think that when you send them your work, you say you like tell them you need their honest opinion and give them somewhere to start with. Like, when you're workshopping, it's easy. You can send it to your group. They know kind of what to look like what they're looking for, rather. Whereas when you're sending it to like other readers or whatever, you're trying to get like general feedback. What kind of feedback do you need? Like, send them a list of questions. Like, does character A and characters B relationship make sense? Does, and like make it a little more specific. How does the, do you like this character's arc from the beginning to the end? What did you think was missing? Is the ending satisfying? Give them somewhere to start so they can give you honest feedback. And not putting them in a position where they have to be like, oh my gosh, how do I tell them that they like change their character's name halfway through, like without sounding like a like a jerk? Like, people will overthink it. We're an anxious generation. And a lot of people would rather just give you like their most gentle opinion because they don't want to hurt you, and that's nice. But you don't need that at this stage.
And that takes me into like the next issue we want to talk about is the editing, different types of editing. We're not going to go into all of them because we talked about the different stages of editing in season one. All the way back there. Season one, episode 7, the basics of editing. If you haven't heard it, I forgive you. Go and do that now. But
I don't remember it.
Me neither. And we recorded it. So, but I was going to say, when you were talking, like, If the first time you ever get like harsh, honest feedback is from an editor that you're paying,
are you
even going to want to take that feedback? Like, just from a human perspective, it's the first time someone has told you to your face, hey, this actually doesn't work, and I don't think it's good enough. And you're paying for that information, and then you choose, like, that hurts, so maybe you decide, like, you don't believe them, you don't agree, for whatever reason, mm-hmm. could be valid, and you don't take that feedback. You just paid for something that you absolutely are not going to use. You shot yourself in the foot, and I don't want that to happen. Like, that's always my – I'm terrified. I know, like, I'm kind of like a doormat nice person, and I say nice things to people. But even then, like, as an editor, I am critiquing your work. I am not your friend. I think mm-hmm. that's something people don't always fully understand until they get the feedback, and then they get overwhelmed. Because, like, oh, I thought they were going to tell me what was good.
I thought they were going to be nice to me.
I thought so. And so I always try and have a balance of that. But at the end of the day, you are paying me to tell you what's not working so that you can fix it. That's the editor-client relationship. And if you've never had that kind of feedback before, it's going to be very difficult to take. And I really don't want – I'm always terrified that that's – because I get a lot of people who are like, this is my first book. It's the first time I've written a book. Yeah. It's like, oh, I have to be so tender with you.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to give different feedback versus when you're working with someone who's experienced. Yeah. They get a different type of feedback.
Yeah.
It might be the same, like, issues are being addressed, but how mm-hmm. you approach it and tell them to fix it is going to be a little different. Mm-hmm. Like, you can definitely be meaner to me than you are.
I just couldn't do it.
Garbage. And she still said it.
I can't do it. I have to tell you what's good and what's not at the same time. I can never just be like, this doesn't work. It's shit. I could never. I would feel like I would die. I would die thinking I was a horrible person.
There's for sure a little inner voice in my brain that does that sometimes, but usually with my own work, not other people's.
I'm looking at my own work, I'm like,
this is garbage.
Yeah,
this
is not hot
garbage. Mm-hmm. And then I read someone else's work, I'm like, ugh. My work still is hot garbage, especially now that I'm hearing it. So, I mean, it depends on what your internal voice is like a little.
My internal voice is awful, but this is something, therapy tangent.
Yeah.
I'm awful to myself, and I would never treat anyone else that way. And that's the thing that I need to internalize, and I think it would really help me. So we're getting there. It's great.
You're throwing down, like, life bombs right now. I'm going, yeah, I'm not nice to myself either.
Jeez. We can all cry about it together.
You are so distractible today.
Yeah, it's great. This is a wonderful
episode.
I feel like I've had too much caffeine now, but I have not. Mm. I think I'm just hungry. But
hunger brings on a totally different.
We're talking about editing issues for indie authors where writers go wrong, and I like what I already said, like about being ready to receive an editor's feedback is a big one. Because that goes into what you hinted at in a previous section where when we get into, I'm going to talk about developmental editing here specifically. This is the high level story structure, narrative arcs, character arcs, motivations, like the really, you know, strategic brainstormy type stuff. This is different than copy edits or line edits or proofreading, which we go into in season 1, episode 7. Again, we talk about all the differences. I'm not going to do that here because the one that really adds value to this conversation is the developmental edit. When you approach an editor for that stage of editing, I think people have very different ideas of what that's going to look like and what they're going to get out of it. And I think key to this, and Maria reminded me of it, so this is kind of a quote from her quoting me at some point in one of our conversations one day back in the past. But your editor is not editing the book for you. They are telling you what's wrong with it so that you can fix it. Unless you're paying even more money for a very different service, which I would probably call ghostwriting. At most, a developmental editor might rewrite a few sentences here or there and show those as examples. It's a suggestion of, like, this is how I might approach reworking this to give this impact that I'm trying to get you to understand. And here's how I would show that. And you're probably absolutely allowed to take the words that they wrote and use them word for word. You don't need to rewrite it your own way. Like, that's why you're working with them. But at the end of the day, the developmental editor is going through and telling you, here's what's not working, here's why it's not working, and hopefully, if they're doing their job, here's how I recommend you fix it. Here's a few different ways you could handle it. Sometimes those edits might mean you rewriting entire scenes cutting entire chapters, moving things around, making big sweeping changes that no editor can do for you effectively because they don't know the story the way that you do. They can't write the story the way that you can. That's why you're the one doing it. So don't expect them to go, like, this is a timing thing. Like, expect when you get eds back from a developmental editor, you will have some big work to do. It might not take you super long if it's like, oh, you understand it really quickly, you see how to solve it, you've gotten some really good recommendations from your editor, and you go in and you make those fixes. So don't necessarily be daunted in that way, but expect to have to do revisions after a dev edit, even if your work is pretty polished. If all you're hoping to do is hand the book off and tell the editor how sick you are of your book and how you never want to see it again, I don't want to say this, but I'm going to say it. You are not ready for an editor. You are not ready. If you're not ready, and then you're not expecting to put in even more work throughout this process, then there's absolutely no point in paying that person. There's no point in paying them for their knowledge because you're not going to do anything with it. Please don't do this. Please, yes. I beg you.
I think this gets into, like, a lot of people finish their book and then they send it to an editor and they're expecting, like, sweeping praise. Like, you are a genius. This or is just the, like, best thing I've ever read.
Or just, and, like line edits.
Yeah, line edits. Like, everything's fix this perfect.
Word and you're good.
Just know if you're going to write a book and get it published, like, you're going to have to go through that uncomfortable feeling of growth with the manuscript.
Every time.
It's not just your personal growth. It's the manuscript's every growth time. And you got to go with it. Yeah. And if you're not okay with making changes, you probably shouldn't be publishing because you have to do it. It's just part of it. Like, if you end up querying down the road and you get a deal, like, and you're going to get trad published and the editor says, yeah, we can't have this, like, assault scene here.
Oh, whoops.
And you're like, no, that has to stay. Mm-hmm. That could ruin your career because you need to learn to listen. But you need to listen in a way that it doesn't compromise your artistic vision.
Yeah,
I suppose. But if you're not ready to take the editor's feedback or your workshopping feedback and apply it, then you've got more work to do on yourself, really, before you can be a writer.
Yeah,
and this is why I think writers are so hard on themselves, because there's always something you can change and improve, and you do need to know where to stop as well.
Yeah,
right. Absolutely. Which is probably a whole other discussion. How to know when you're done editing. Never, because you're going to publish it and then a month later you're going to be like, oh.
Yep.
Sorry, I cut you off. I had to throw that in there.
No, I was done.
Because I critiqued some pages on Twitter, well, a couple years ago now. I don't really frequent Twitter anymore, or X or whatever. And I had swapped pages with someone just first chapter. And she gave me kind of like weirdly harsh feedback, but I was like, yeah, whatever. Like, not everybody is used to workshopping, right? And I gave her, like, my feedback, and she just didn't want to hear it. And I was like, well, I'm already querying it, and it's good like this. I'm like, then why'd you offer to swap pages?
Absolutely.
You're not going to listen. You just wanted to give, like, you just wanted to, like, rip mine apart and just ignore what happened with yours?
Maybe. That's another thing you have to deal with in workshop group is people who are there for the ego trip. They're there to make themselves feel better. Point. Which, like, it can happen. There can be people who go in to do that, and it sucks for everyone.
Yeah, it sure does.
And I'm sorry. I'm sorry that people have to go through that. It sucks.
Yeah, it sucks. It does suck.
But yes.
But yeah, if you're going the self-publishing route, I imagine you're thinking, I have to do how many rounds of edits? How many different kinds of edits?
More than you think.
More than you think. This is all part of the process. Like, I don't know if this is a good example, but imagine writing is like baking. Like, when you first start out, you're kind of muddling through like a chocolate chip cookie recipe because you're like, this is the thing I can conquer. And your loved ones are like, oh, it's so good. Even though, like, you forgot the baking soda and they're like weirdly flat. But eventually you get better at it. You try different approaches, different recipes, different ingredients. And then one day you find like the perfect combo and it turns out great. And that becomes like, you know, your thing. And writing's a bit like that. Like, your first draft is just a bunch of ingredients sitting on the counter. Workshopping and editing is how you get to a good final product and not something that your loved ones are going to spit out into the garbage when you're not looking. So So basically, you need to write multiple drafts and get feedback on multiple drafts before you even think about announcing a publishing date. Trust us on this. The amount of really promising books I've encountered that needed like even just one more round of editing, but often more, is pretty upsetting. Like, don't put your book out in the world without making it the best you can. Another thing to remember about writing is that it's a muscle. Drafting, editing, workshopping, learning about craft, those are all things that strengthen your writing muscles and help you build up your skills. And this is where a lot of writers, both new and old, get discouraged because it's hard. But if you keep going, it is worth it.
Yeah, very rewarding. Absolutely. Taking a step back for a moment after everything we've talked about, I think I've seen in our notes a theme emerging. And basically, it sounds like the biggest. This probably should have been what we opened with. The biggest number one problem that indie and self-published authors face is rushing through the steps. Because you want to get the book out there, you want to hit publish. I understand that. Been there. That's exactly what I did. Like I said, okay, I'm going to do a trilogy experiment and just publish it without editing it. I'm an editor. It makes sense. It's fine. This is how I work.
Hey, you know what? Your books still rock. I don't care how mean you are about them to yourself.
Thank you.
They are still so good.
Thank you so
And
much.
there are, I want you to know, there's books out there that probably had a lot of editing passes that I'm still like, oh, could
Oof.
have been better.
Yeah, fair point. Thank you for that interjection. I need to hear that. but all that to say, like wanting to rush through steps, wanting to get to that, like cross the finish line feeling is such an easy trap to fall into, and I get that. I think the thing to try to remember is that you are self-publishing, and that word is very important because by definition, you are doing this to yourself. If you announce a release date, you are setting that deadline for yourself. No one else has control over that. This is a big daunting thing for some people that like it all relies on me and that's terrifying. But my hope is that this will help you see a bit of freedom in this because this means you can change the deadline whenever you want. And the only person that cares is you. And that sounds kind of sad, but it's also really beautiful. It is your book. It is your timeline. You're working under your rules. And that is very empowering. Bump the publish day back. Just do it for the love of God and your book, for the love of your book. Do it. You will thank yourself. Your book will thank you. The readers of your book will thank you and your book, and it'll be great. Bump the date back. I feel like this would save so many books from just like the basic complaint of falling into like typo-riddled obscurity because after rushing through workshopping or rushing through beta reading and rushing through the developmental edit or and the copy edits after that, like after all of that, the last thing a writer wants to hear is that, oh, whoops, there's one more round of editing. Now you need to do the proofread. Like, right? So whether you're feeling that sinking feeling of one more round already at the developmental edit stage or the copy edit stage or elsewhere in the process, this rushing through it is just the worst possible thing you can do for your work. Skipping stages happens constantly with self-published authors, especially. Of the 30 plus authors I've worked with in the last couple of years, most of them get to the proofreading stage and either didn't know it was a thing or didn't budget enough money for it and now they want to skip it because they can't afford it, or didn't prioritize it in their timeline and now they feel like they have no time for it because they want to be published in 7 days, and that's the date that they chose, and that's the date that they want to stick with. So many writers skip things because of all these different reasons, and it's such a sad thing to me because like the research, the resources were there. You could have known, you could have planned for it, and you did it, and it breaks my heart. Like there are readers who will stop reading a book because of typos. There's just too many. It just drives them crazy. Like I know you've talked about how you've talked about this.
I'll pick up a book. Like a lot of times now, if I'm buying on a Kindle, I'll download the sample, which works quite well because most self-pubbed authors are on like Kindle, whatever. And I'll like download the sample and I'll start reading. And if the grammar and the spelling and everything is like not up to par in the first chapter, I'm kind of wondering like what else did they miss? And I also find it distracting. Not everyone does. Again, opinion. I find it extremely distracting because like because I've been workshopping for so long and writing for a long time, I immediately start, my editing brain starts instead of my reading brain.
And then you can't enjoy it as much.
Yes, that's exactly right. It takes away some of the enjoyment for me.
Yeah. And again, yeah, like you said, it's an opinion, it's a preference, different people. Like it doesn't, for me, it typos, whatever. If I like the story, I'll keep reading it. For other people, it is the difference between reading and reviewing it or saying, did not finish, I put it down, couldn't get through it. And that's something to take very seriously. I personally, if I find a typo in a published book, I'm like, aha, victory, I spotted it.
I found one in like a Tessa Bailey book and I was like, aha, it does happen to the big name.
Right? It feels so good.
Too. So I was like, I felt like really vindicated.
Yeah.
Because like, yeah, I mean, you can't catch every mistake, like you said many times in our editing
95%.
Talks, but you can do your best to make it nice and readable. Like, would you turn in a big report at work with a bunch of spelling errors on the first page?
I mean, some people would.
Some people probably don't. Do, but the people who are good at their job do not.
Yeah.
And that is what you're doing when you become a self-pubbed author. That's your job. It's, you should be doing the best you can at this job because it doesn't have a corporate overlord. Right?
Yeah.
You're your own boss and you want to.
Yep. It all ties back to you. So it's, you know, it all speaks to your reputation too. So that's something to consider. Not to be all like, I feel like we're getting all doom and gloom about like, oh, all the things you have
we
to
We always
think
doom and gloom. And then at the end, we're like, don't worry.
Don't worry. So sorry.
We're therapy again. You go to therapy.
Oh, yeah.
So like this, all this trauma. And then at the end, your therapist is like, well, that was a great session.
Yeah, you did so much good work.
You're like crushed. And you're like, yeah, it was great. Awesome.
Oh, my word. I love it. I love it so much. But I was going to bring up the Nymph Keepers again and how that experience felt to me. Like after going through it, I would caution authors against even announcing a publishing date, like even saying that to anyone except for yourself. You can set deadlines and timelines and goals for yourself. Do that everywhere. I do it all the time. But I would say don't announce it to anyone else until after the proofread is, I would say, done. Like maybe partway done if you feel like it's coming along and you know you're going to stick to your timeline. But if you're not sure, like wait until it's done. Make sure the proofread is done so that you like give it the time that it needs before you even say, okay, now it's ready. Because so many times what happens is like, well, I have my publishing date. I'll just get the proofread done really fast and then I'll be able to meet my deadline and it's fine. We all do this. It's like writing a paper the night before it's due. You run a little spell check and you're like, yay. Spell check is not enough.
It's
I'm
not
so
enough.
Sorry.
And I gotta say, as an ADHD person, I thrive on having that imminent deadline to finish stuff.
Right.
And it has not served me well with my writing.
No.
Okay. So you have to like resist the urge to rush through this stuff and like resist. Do it last minute because you're gonna do it because you're on a deadline, but it won't be good.
Yeah.
Nothing good. Yep. Comes of anything being rushed. Like I can't think of anything in the world that turns out better because you rushed it. Mm-mm. Nothing.
I mean, sometimes it's the difference between it getting done or not getting done at all.
Absolutely.
And there's something to be said for that. But in this context, I think, rushing generally bad. And now I'm going to say something that I feel like it's something my therapist would be really proud of me for. So I think it needs to be said. But beyond that of like, you're your own boss and you get to set the deadlines. Don't be a dummy. Like you can change it whenever you want. Duh. I think there's something to be said for allowing yourself to give each part of the process the time that it deserves and give yourself space, like just genuinely give yourself space to breathe and allow yourself that gentleness and that respect, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Give yourself the dignity of working through each stage with the amount of effort that it deserves. And then like let yourself celebrate as you complete each, like every time you
should celebrate
around,
every time you hit a milestone.
If you finish the dev edit, you got the feedback and you're making plans, celebrate. The dev editor returned feedback to you. That's wonderful. They didn't die in the middle. That's great. Have
That's
a cup
great.
Of
they
wine.
They finished it.
Absolutely. Because like you're relying on other people here. That's going to, we're going to talk about timeline in a bit and that's a big thing. So I would say celebrate each step of the way and especially when you get close to that, like, you are about to publish a fucking book. Like, what?
That's huge.
That's
and
amazing.
For most of us, like, that's a lifelong dream.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've been dreaming of being a published author since I was, like, six. We did some assignment at in grade one, and it was like, what do you want to be when you grow up?
Yeah.
And like, my parents saved it, and I'll tell you why in a second why they saved it. They saved it for a funny reason, not because I was like so smart or something, but I wanted to be an author. That was like one of the first things on there. I wanted to go to the Olympics in horseback riding, which was so cute. The six-year-old me thought I would like totally have the funding and the skill for that. But hey, you know, six-year-olds are pretty ambitious. And then based on stuff my dad said as a joke, but I, of course, being six and also, you know, undiagnosed ADHD, I take stuff pretty literally. My final thing on my little assignment was, if none of that works out, I'll just marry rich. So I did not marry rich, if anybody's wondering. I made the mistake, like, I married for love first. I think you're supposed to marry for love second. But anyways, that was my little grade one assignment. So like, being published is like lifelong dream for me.
Oh my god.
So I hate to sound like a big dork, but like or an inspirational poster, but like, this is the part where I say like, enjoy the journey of doing this, because it is such a big deal. Most people in their life will never do a project like this for themselves. Mm-hmm. Not ever. Mm-hmm. Something that will just be an abstract dream.
Yeah.
And so it's important to celebrate. Like, I think we've talked about this when we talk about 12-week plans and things. When you hit your goal, have a celebratory whatever.
Reward,
have a little
yourself.
Mini bottle of champagne. Like, go order pizza. Like, just do something for yourself that's like a self-care.
Acknowledge it.
Yeah.
Bare minimum.
Yeah. And like, honestly, as someone who never celebrates their own wins, like, mm-hmm. and I love to celebrate my friends' wins, mm-hmm. I've been trying to do that for myself. Like, I made it through this week.
Yes.
This week. I had a really bad week. And I made sure that I did some nice stuff for myself. Good. Because I deserved it.
That is so wonderful. And I know how hard you've worked on that. So
Get
a little teary over here. It's fine.
Sorry.
I love it. But yeah, all that to say, like, celebrate that moment. Give yourself I would say give yourself a little bit of breathing room between proofread, design, the book is ready, and publishing day. Like, give yourself some time to like feel that and to sit with that and be like, my book is ready, I can hit publish soon. Like,
here it is.
I would say sit with that for a day or two or something. Mm-hmm. Whatever you like, however long you
however
can
long
like handle
need.
It
which kind of gets me to the point of like, don't announce your book until you're like actually like pretty much done.
Yeah,
because I see a lot of people do this on Bookstagram, especially Bookstagrammers turned authors. They get really excited, which I love, and they're trying to like start their marketing off early, you know, and so they announce their book and they announce a release date, but they're still editing
it.
And I'm like, oh god,
yeah,
like, brave.
Talk about pressure.
You're probably never gonna sleep again, because once you announce the deadline, you do have a bit of an obligation. You can change it, but you do have an obligation to follow through, because people now have the expectation that it's coming. And so I think when you're publishing yourself, there's a lot to do, and I think majority of us also have a day job, like, you know, we have and life and pets and kids and family, like, you have to allow for that kind of time. You can't be like, well, I got my developmental edits back, I can announce my book to be ready in a month. Okay, what happens if your kid gets sick?
Yeah.
What happens if COVID happens and the world shuts down and you're all stuck at home for a month? You just cannot predict the future. And so you do need to give yourself a bit of time.
And that's not to say plan for like every catastrophe
you don't
that
need
could
to
possibly
plan for that,
happen.
Just know that sometimes you're going to run into some shit that's going to delay you.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've seen a lot of first-time authors rush their final product just because they've committed to a release date.
Yeah.
And it's such an easy thing to not do. Mm-hmm. Just don't announce your release date. Like, it's coming fall 2024.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Now you got from like, you know, what, end of September to like end of November.
Yeah. That's what I did with the third book, you know? The Nymph Keepers. Yeah. I said like summer 2022 or whatever it was. And I kept initially it was like, it's going to be the beginning. I want it to be the beginning of summer, but I'm not saying that because I couldn't say it with confidence. It was the end of summer. Mm-hmm. It was like the very last few. Could you even call it
you
summer? I don't know.
Through.
I did.
But, you know, you had to push it. And that's something like giving yourself like a season if you want to announce it. Right. And you totally can. I'm not saying you can't, you have to hide your projects from like your socials or whatever, but just keep in mind that like rushing equals mistakes. And I would definitely recommend making like a calendar specifically for your publishing journey and noting the things that will delay you. So like large events in your life, like if you have a 2-week holiday in March, like maybe don't plan to release your book on April 1st, because you don't know those 2 weeks, lots can happen. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, you, if you're hiring out for certain things, copy edits, line edits, proofread, you are working on someone else's timeline now.
Yeah.
So yeah, you can say, I want to publish this on March 1st, but your proofread might not be back until February 27th. Are you really going to do it? Like, you could, but why would you do that to yourself?
Why would you do that to yourself? Exactly.
And like, and it happens to published authors too. Like, mm-hmm. there's a good amount of discussion and rumor that the sequel to Fourth Ring was rushed to capitalize on the hype, and the readers could tell. And a mm-hmm. lot of them are going to quit reading the series now because they were like, well, I'm super disappointed.
Ooh.
You know, I mean, I DNF that book on chapter 4, so I don't really have an opinion on that. That won't make people come after me with pitchforks.
Oh my word.
But it's like, you know, she could have prevented that.
Slowed that down.
I'm sure it was hard and there's a lot of pressure, but
and that's a traditionally published one, right? So the timeline may have been out of her control.
Exactly, yeah.
The thing with self-publishing, and that's what this episode is about. We talked a lot about both because there's so much crossover, but like, this is about self-publishing. And that's one of the big benefits to it, is like, you control that date. Like, yeah, if you announce a date and then you have to change it later, you might disappoint some people, and that's something to be aware of. So that's why we're saying, like, don't announce that date until like you are ready. But yeah, that is within your control, so use that to your advantage, basically. Mm-hmm. And we've already been talking about, this is issue number 5 that we wanted to talk about, timeline and technical problems, like leaving yourself space for things to go wrong. Mm-hmm. I know there's a lot of optimists out there who see life as this glass half full, and I don't understand you at all, but I respect your opinions. And this might be the hardest thing for that kind of a worldview to plan for and appreciate, but when you're planning out your publishing timeline, giving yourself space and buffers, so many buffers, is so, so, so important. Like, just running through a few examples of where things can go wrong, where your timeline can get extended unexpectedly for things outside of your control. Like, there's nothing you can do about this. Like, with revisions, I've had clients request a developmental edit for me and then a copy edit as well. They want me to do both. I don't love that. I think you should get different people to do those things, because once you've looked at something long enough, you get sick of it. But that's a separate thing. But essentially they say, okay, I want the dev edit done by this date, and then I want you to start the copy edit 2 weeks after that. So after I complete, and then so that I can like meet my publishing deadline. That means that they're only giving themselves 2 weeks between receiving my developmental feedback, 2 weeks to comb through potentially 20 to 40 pages or more of notes on what is not working in the story, before they need to have that manuscript back to me, edited, revised, and ready for copy edits. Even if you're planning to take those 2 weeks off from the rest of your life and do nothing other than make edits based on those notes, that is not enough time. You're going to feel rushed, and you're going to, you know, see an edit that like is going to require a lot of work of you, and almost guaranteed your instinct is going to be like, well, if I just add this line here and take this thing out, maybe that's enough. Maybe that's good enough. If you're already talking that way, that's a red flag for me. Like, it's probably not enough. It's the bare minimum that you need to make yourself feel better about it, but it's not actually fixing the issue. So I will always say, give yourself more time than you think you need. You can always send the copy editor your manuscript early if you happen to finish before you thought you would, and say, hey, if you have time to get an early start, it's ready. And if the editor does have time, they probably will start early. I love starting projects early. That's one of my favorite things. but if they don't have time, then that's a good thing for both of you. You both get more time away from the manuscript to let it breathe and sit. It's a win-win. And that's just editing, and that's between any stages of editing, from your dev to your copy edit, from your copy edit to your proofread. There may be multiple rounds. Maybe there's an issue that you don't solve within the first round, and you have to go back and forth in emails, and people take a couple days to get back to you because they have a life and they have other clients that they're dealing with. Like, all of those things can delay. So give yourself more time than you think you need when you're planning that stage, so that when things inevitably take longer than you expect, you have that buffer and you're not running into the next stage too quickly. Cover design. If you have ideas and opinions about what your cover should look like, and you will have ideas and opinions about what it should look like, cover design is going to take a lot of time. and I'm speaking now as a graphic designer as well, who designs things for clients who have opinions about the way things should look. It could take a lot of revisions and going back and forth on the minutiae of things. It's like, this thing, it's not quite right. Can you move the text up like 3 more millimeters? I know we just moved it 2 times in the other direction and back, but like, just, I think those 3 millimeters will make the big difference. And I am not exaggerating. When it comes to visual design, you are always getting down to the absolute nitty gritty in the last few stages, and you'll go back and forth on things that seem to not matter at all, but they matter a lot to one or the other. So yeah, cover design, leave yourself lots of space and room for that process. And then formatting, and again, from experience as a graphic designer, do you trust computer programs?
No.
Good.
Never.
Good, good. Because if you do, you shouldn't. If not, you already know this, but the amount of little errors that can crop up and derail everything, and you have to troubleshoot things because the program's not doing what it's supposed to do. Or sometimes, like, you'll send something, your formatter will send something back to you, and you look through it and you're like, hey, this spacing thing seems weird. Was this there before? It wasn't. It just suddenly appeared in between, and the program did that to you. The person didn't do it. So sometimes programs, computer programs, can introduce errors where that weren't there before, and the issue was never an issue before, and now it is, and you have to ask the formatter to fix it and go back and forth again. That's another few hours or days of revisions, depending on what else the formatter has going on in their timeline. So your timeline foiled once again. Hey. We love that. This section is causing me like so much secondary anxiety right now.
I'm having secondary anxiety too, because I'm like, I'm going to query my next project, but if I self-publish it, I'm like making little lists as we're talking. I'm like, ooh, remember that.
Yeah. I mean, like, the beautiful thing again is like, if you're not in a rush to publish, you can say, okay, I'm hiring my developmental editor. Just hire that. Do that. Finish the process. Okay, dev edits are done. Like, we got it to a really good place. I'm ready for copy edits now. I'm going to go and try and hire someone. It will extend your timeline, maybe way longer than you want it to, but that is always an option. And I think that's important to keep in mind. You can schedule a few things at a time and then wait until a few things are done before you schedule the next few things. Like, as you get a better idea of where your timeline is at, and you will thank yourself in the long run. Because again, like we've said, you're relying on other people. And other people deal with life the same way we do. They get sick, family emergencies come up, plans get derailed. I've heard stories from authors coming to me that, like, I had been planning to work with this editor and then I didn't hear back from them. And then I found out from someone else that, like, their friend died or something. Like,
things happen. Or sometimes you just straight up get ghosted.
Yep. Like, absolutely.
The woman that built my website, like, I knew her through, like, horses and stuff and graphic design. And we, like, did my whole website and I was, like, super stoked. And there's just one thing she had to fix, which was, like, the connection to, like, our podcast episodes is broken. Right. And she ghosted me. She never even invoiced me. Wow. And I was like, listen, if you don't want to get paid, like, I changed it like 10 times to finish the site and to pay her, because I don't like leaving bills unpaid.
Yeah.
But this was, like, 3 years ago now. Like, I'm...
Yeah.
You know, and every time I've seen her, she like runs away from me, and I'm like, I've seen her at the horse shows a few times, and I'm like, I'm okay,
all right.
I don't know what I did wrong aside from trying to pay you for your work, but
wild.
Okay. So I mean, you don't know what could happen, and that's also something, unfortunately, that could happen, is you could totally get ghosted by someone that you hired out for. So it's just something, like, you can create a timeline for yourself, but there is gonna be some unexpected blips on the way, right?
Yep. It happens.
Real pain in the ass, but it happens. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think where we're getting at, leave time for the technical issues because those are the least predictable, I would say. especially if you're not a very tech savvy person, you got to hire out for like most of these steps. Like, I know I'm going to have to hire out for most of these. Like, sure, there's some of it I could teach myself, but you know, I know me. And I'd rather just pay someone to do it. There's things I'll just pay for. And this, you know, formatting and that is like one of those things. And a lot of writers have had issues with like book distribution or like issues like when they upload to Amazon, like something happened with their draft and it feels really bad for them when that happens. But there's stuff that happens like that. So you do have to try and be flexible and kind of I mean, you can't plan ahead for these things, but you can plan to give yourself time to deal with the unexpected things.
Absolutely.
And don't beat yourself up because some stuff is going to be out of your control. I mean, your writing and how good your writing is and the work that you do on your writing and your marketing, that's all you can do that. That's in your control.
Yeah.
But just know, like, the stuff that's out of your control, like, have a little grace for other people and for yourself during that.
For sure.
And it's, you know, I would still say, like Elise said, have your book completely ready and then don't take a little break to like absorb that you did it. Mm-hmm. It's ready. And then you can put it out into the world, because I would hate it if I worked, like, some of my drafts have been in the works for years.
Yeah.
Some of my stories. Absolutely. I would be doing myself a huge disservice if I rushed it and put it out into the world in a way that it wasn't as I envisioned. Right. So you do have to give time for that.
Oh, yeah. I love how you said that.
Aw, so me. I contributed after Elise basically did this whole episode. But anyway, that is the tea on where writers go wrong for this season. Please rate and review our show wherever you get your podcast. You can follow us at the Tea Grannies Podcast on Instagram and Threads. We can't wait for you to join us for season 5. But in the meantime, keep your eyes peeled for some exciting news regarding the launch of our Patreon. And in the meantime, happy writing.